This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. And this is the second edition of our podcast network episodes with Mike Ergo from Transitions from War. If you didn't listen to the last one, the inaugural episode, that was where we reviewed Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. This week, we're going into a little bit more of Mike and my experience with depression. And we're talking about different tools, different tactics, different things that we've used to overcome depression. Mike has extensive experience with this. He works as a therapist with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and he's also dealt with a lot of depression on his own. He's a Marine Corps veteran like myself. You know, I'm really excited about this podcasting network that we've got going on. Each week, we're doing an episode on each other's shows, and we're jumping back and forth and giving our insights. Next week, we'll be on the Transitions from War podcast. And if you haven't checked out Mike Ergo's Transitions from War, you definitely need to do so. Really great podcast with a lot of tools and things that will help you along on your way. Just a quick note here, this podcast is brought to you by F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome, delicious packets of macadamia nut butters. Mix them up with chocolate, with sea salt, with pecan butter. They're really delicious. They also have these amazing cheese snacks. Really nutritious stuff. You can get yours for 20% off by heading over to www.dropanfbomb.com. Use the code WarriorSoul at checkout, you know, and you'll get 20% off your first order. With that, let's get into this joint episode with Mr. Mike Ergo from Transitions from War, talking about depression. What is going on, everyone? This is Chris Albert here with Mike Ergo. What are we calling ourselves, Mike? What are we?
I don't know, man. Veteran Podcast Network sounds a little too generic.
Veteran Podcast. We call ourselves... yeah, that's an interesting one. We'll think about it. But for now, it's Chris Albert and Mike Ergo, or Mike Ergo and Chris Albert, Warrior Soul and Transitions from War. And we're coming to you every single week to discuss an important issue, a new book, cool stuff that we come across, and giving you some tips to move forward with your lives. If you weren't here for last week's inaugural edition, we talked about David Goggins's book, Can't Hurt Me. And this week we're going to be talking about a really important issue, and that's how to deal with depression. And I think it's something both of us have experienced probably in very different ways, but I think we both experienced it. We both developed some tools to work around it. I've talked about it a lot here on the Warrior Soul podcast, and I know Mike's talked about it a lot on Transitions from War. And I know we've talked about it together during the shows that we've done together. But we want to get into some nitty-gritty tools today.
Yeah, sounds good. It's definitely a thing that's not talked about too much. I think especially among men, because I think women tend in general to be able to talk about it, or at least have the vocabulary for it. You know, men usually it's difficult to admit to it because there's a stigma around it. And then there's also just the lack of vocabulary. You know, a lot of guys, myself included, are predisposed or maybe just more likely to have a few different words to describe an emotional state, you know, such as okay, stoked, or bummed out. You know,
yeah, as few words as possible, right?
And exactly.
And then you're just moving on to the next thing. We just want it to be, I think, as you know, not as, we don't want to really admit that it's there. And I think it goes back to, you know, we talked about, we're probably going to do Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Living, at some point, but I think it goes back to the idea that it's not really in, well, we don't think it's in our archetype, right? And it doesn't fit the story. And I think men, you know, it's important for us to try to live by an archetype. And if we could figure out an archetype that includes that in the story and you know, where we can own our story, I think it'll be a lot easier to talk about. But what, so talk about your experience with depression. When did it start for you, man?
Yeah, this has been a lifelong thing for me. And the more I look back on my life, the more I can see it there. And I think some people are more predisposed to have it. And I actually went back and I did the 23andMe genetic testing. You know, you spit in a cup and then they tell you a couple different things. You know, one, different markers for ancestry, but then two, different markers for like health benefits and risks.
Mm-hmm.
And I used that information and I plugged it in. It's interesting because once you have that genetic information, you can plug that into different websites and some that ask you to pay and some that are free. But so I came across this other website. I think it's geneticgenie.com. And I'll send you the link so we can put it in the show notes. But it was something that it was looking at genetic mutations. So just differences in DNA from person to person. And some of these mutations predispose people to be less likely to reuptake or to utilize things like serotonin and dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely have genetic variations on those specific markers. So I realized that, okay, that makes a lot of sense because I look back at my life and early, like growing up wasn't too bad. Everything was pretty good, relatively speaking. You know, I had a place to sleep. I had people that cared about me and I had a safe environment to live in. But and then not, I look back and there's just a dark cloud over me. And so some of it was genetic and some of it was ways of dealing with it. But I can definitely relate more to the periods of my life since I've got out of the Marine Corps and kind of tried to find purpose or you know, just the more recent examples of when I've kind of fallen into that dark hole of depression.
Yeah, you know, for me, yeah, it goes back to childhood. I've done the 23andMe test. I haven't done what you're talking about, so I'm going to have to upload my stuff into that website. So I'm looking forward to getting that. But yeah, for me, I mean, it goes back to childhood, and you know, it's like I think it came about because it was a feeling like I couldn't fix my life, right? Like I felt like I had no recourse to try to fix things that were going wrong in my life. Now, what was going wrong in my life at the time? Well, I didn't have a dad. I had my mom and I was really, really lonely, I think, as a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, and just spent a lot of time by myself. And one of the things I've grown to understand as an adult is that human beings are very social. And if you're not around other people, it allows you to go into certain holes in your brain, right? So you dig yourself into certain holes. And I find when I'm by myself too often, a lot of times I'll dig myself into a hole of despair. And it's not really like, it's like these mental constructs I'll create, you know, the negative self-talk, the you know, you're not good enough to do this, or you're not good enough to do that, or you're not good enough to you know, for example, running my business. You know, I spent a lot of time alone over the last few years running my business, and it was a constant battle. Like, you know, you don't deserve this business. You don't deserve to be here. You don't deserve this. You don't deserve that. There is no reason why you should be doing this. You should just go get a job at Starbucks, that kind of shit.
Yeah. And then you don't have other people around you to check those,
right,
those thoughts and assertions, right?
Right. Exactly. And because you don't have anybody to talk to about it, you end up, you know, validating that conversation in your head, and it becomes part of you, you know, it becomes part of you. And, you know, I found that I need other people. As much as I hate it, as much as sometimes I hate being around other people, I need other people. I need other people to talk to.
It's a necessary thing. And not just for the validation or things people say, but we are wired. We have what's called mirror neurons. So like you're looking in a mirror, but these mirror neurons, when you're with other people, you can experience feelings that they're having. And that's the core basis for compassion and empathy in the human race. And so that's how we get along. That's how we evolved, you know, to cooperate and work together. If we can see someone else's suffering, or we can share in someone else's joy, that is, you know, we get that just from seeing other people, that look in their face. So it's like almost like living vicariously through them in a way. So when we don't have that contact with other people, we're not getting that feedback into our brain. And that's, you know, that's why we look at the archetype of the, you know, the crazy loner who lives in the woods, maybe the Ted Kaczynski type, is there because they're not getting that feedback from anyone else. And so those assertions that you make, the negative self-talk, then gets confirmed by your own further negative self-talk. And so you're building a house of cards on that, like, negative shit talking yourself.
Yeah, no, exactly. Let me ask you this. When you were in the Marine Corps, what was your level of depression? Like, what were you experiencing?
I think I remember calling home once and I think telling my own mom that I was in a funk, just kind of down. But for the most part, that was towards the beginning too, when I was just, you know, getting the shit hazed out of me.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, I was happy to be with the people I was with, and the circumstances were difficult, but that feedback I was getting, you know, reading those subtle cues and the nonverbal communication from other people and just being part of something was really positive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For me, I think when we were busy, I tended to not have as much depression. So like if we're on deployment, or if we're you know, we're doing a workup, or we're doing a lot of training, or like periods when I was boot camp, things like that. That's when I think back and I'm like, you know, there wasn't a lot. But periods when like we were up at Camp Schwab, Okinawa, and we're doing nothing for a little bit. And I remember that period being like one of the most depressive periods I'd ever had, because I'd find myself walking around and just like doing nothing. And like, you know, okay, it's time for chow. Okay, it's time to go back to the barracks. Okay, it's time to do this. Okay, it's time to do that. And that's when I would be like really, really dark. But I think in those periods, what kind of helped was, you know, trying to get a lot of PT in, trying to make something out of, make noise in the kind of quiet that was there.
That's true. That there's something that, I mean, which goes along with the Marine Corps culture of rampant alcohol abuse. And alcohol is a depressant. So that fed into periods of times of being depressed. But I think that no matter what the circumstance was, that if you get into and start feeling depressed, start feeling low, you know, you start feeling a feeling of low self-worth and feeling stuck. There's no matter what it is, there's definitely a few things that can be done no matter why you're feeling depressed, which is one of the things we can get into.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that has really helped me is, and this is counterintuitive, so not resisting the feeling of that sadness or the depression or whatever it is. So much energy can be spent pushing it away and be like, I don't want to feel like this. Why is this here? You know, fuck this. But when I've allowed myself to stop resisting whatever needs to be felt, like there's a stuck energy that needs to move through, something I'm not dealing with that needs to just pass through me. And for whatever reason, by resisting feeling that, I'm keeping it there longer. This really simple breathing exercise that one of my old mentors taught me was, whatever the feeling is that you don't like, you can imagine yourself greeting it as you breathe in, you know, silently in your head, just saying, for the example for this would be, hello, depression, as you're breathing in. And then as you breathe out, saying, my old friend. And it's a simple way of reclaiming your breath. So you're breathing and you're allowing yourself just not to resist it. And a lot of this happens kind of subconsciously, but it's a way of allowing yourself to feel whatever you might be avoiding.
That's interesting. That's interesting because, you know, I've definitely been there where I'm trying to fight it off. And I know the feeling of trying to fight it off because I feel it in my throat, and it's like stress that wells up like right in your throat. And then all of a sudden my heart rate will start going up. And that's when, like, that feeling of when I'm about to fight it, that's when I think it gets the worst, the absolute worst. You know, when I'm like really in despair. So it's interesting about greeting it. I've never thought about it that way before.
Yeah. I can relate to what you're saying about feeling that in the throat and just not wanting to be there. And for myself, we all have our different ways of dealing with stress and discomfort. My go-to has always been to disappear or dissociate, just kind of in my head, just completely check out, almost like I'm invisible. Go back to, you know, early life trauma or a lot of different ways. But no matter what, I notice when I'm trying to fight it too, and that's when it's the worst. So this ties into some of the work I do, you know, counseling other veterans, and just the theory that the feeling itself isn't the problem, but it's the unwillingness to feel that feeling. And especially if it's uncomfortable, it's like, well, if we think we can push it away, yeah, of course that makes sense to try to push it away. But the fact is we don't really have as much choice. And so this isn't a position of weakness. This is a position of knowing what we can change and what we can't change. So the next thing, once I've allowed myself to feel whatever is there, whatever it is have some introspection as I'm breathing and ask myself, where in my life do I feel stuck? What could be the source of it? And I might not get an answer to this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's clear, sometimes it's not. But then if I identify a place in my life where I feel stuck, then I ask myself, is there an aspect of this I have control over? Is there something I can change? And then what can I do? And also, is there an aspect of this I don't have control over? And in that case, can I accept my situation? Can I accept that part of it? You know, for example, the weather. Can I change the weather? No, I can't. But can I find an acceptance that it's not the kind of weather I want it to be, or the climate at work, or whatever something I have zero influence over, so I can stop wasting my energy wishing it wasn't so.
That's another interesting one too, because I've definitely been in that position where I've done a lot of shitty jobs. You know what I mean? Like I've been a laborer, I've been a landscaper, I've been all kinds of crazy things, right? And yeah. The thing is though, what I found is that the way I approach, and I learned this in the Marine Corps, the way I approach the job is everything. Because like I remember like, you know, cleaning steps with a scuzz brush, trying to make sure that like all the scuffs were out of the steps, and I made it fun, right? And I made it like a game, and that was everything. And that was like one of the best days of boot camp I remember, because I was cleaning the scuzz brush, and we had so much fun just trying to get these scuffs out. But like, you know, same thing with like some of the labor jobs I've had. You know, I'm like, all right, I'm going to move this many bags of cement in the next hour, and my boss is going to be like, holy shit. And you know, and even jobs I've like, I do contracting jobs right now, with, not like construction contracting, but like office contracting. So like I consult for companies, and a lot of times the work is arduous. And, you know, I think to myself, all right, I'm going to knock this CEO socks off. And like, it's kind of like playing a game with myself, you know, just trying to
get
in there.
Yeah. That's a good point. And so you notice like the mindset is everything, but then when it comes down to it, really, like how can someone apply that mindset? And I think that the creativity helps, like you said, you make it a game, or you find an aspect of something as miserable as it is that you like, or can even kind of make a joke out of.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like what the Stoics say, you know, like it's not what's happening to you, it's how you perceive what's happening to you. Right.
Yeah.
And like, if you could do that, I think there's a lot of really dark freaking situations out there, but you can make the best out of those situations to the point where, you know, you can use those situations to your advantage. And I think that's part of it too, you know?
I mean, you think of the guys that you were with, even in boot camp or in your unit, who, you know, when you're at doing some miserable field exercise, or maybe it's morning PT and everybody's still drunk or hungover or feeling like shit, and they're able to make some, you know, either completely morbid joke or something that just lightens the mood, and that changes everything. It's almost like they can break the spell of that depression,
yeah,
and make light of the situation. So like those are the guys who that kind of attitude, you hear it's so prevalent, like in the spec ops community, you know, just the ability to make light of a tough situation. And then that mindset is everything. So one thing I remember in high school too, and I was talking about this yesterday with someone, is that I had this is a small example, but it was something that bothered me that I didn't have any control over. I had this one teacher who would say, okay. And he'd say that all the time, once or twice a sentence. And it just, for whatever reason, just fucking annoyed me.
Like the South Park guy, like, okay.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Just like that. And so eventually, somehow I decided to turn it into a game, because I just came to this point of like, I can't change this, because I was just dreading every time he said it. He's like, don't fucking say it. Oh, I said it. And so then I just started tallying it up each class. And I'd like, all right, let's see if Mr. B can break his record from yesterday. I think he's got it in him. And I'd start like keeping a record of how many times he said it each class. And then I looked forward to each time it happened. And so it's like, I totally like changed my interaction with this minor thing, and it became my favorite part of the class.
Oh man, that must've been brutal, man. That must've been brutal.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Marine Corps version is like, I remember people, like you get like these instructors, and it was like their first time as an instructor, and they'd say, you understand that after every sentence.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand that.
Yes.
And you hear people using, just even swearing the wrong way, which became so prevalent at boot camp. I remember the first couple of weeks, I'm like listening to all these drill instructors be like, all right, get your damn freaking, you know, boots and get your damn freaking socks. And you're like, nobody talks like this. And then it just like, it took on, it became an epidemic. One thing I was looking at in my own life, where I noticed, so lately I went through, I feel like I'm coming out of it right now, but I went into a deep, deep depression, right after I lost my dog in October. And this is a dog I had since right after I got out of the Marine Corps. So he helped me through a lot of tough times. So I've been in and out of some pretty deep depression since October. And one thing that I noticed is that I did some introspection this last week, and I noticed that I asked myself those questions, where do I feel stuck? And part of it was at where I work. I feel stuck there. And some of it has to do with, you know, how I'm dealing with other people. And I looked at, so what can I control? And some of it had to do with having a couple of difficult conversations with people that I didn't want to have. It's uncomfortable. And then realizing, once I realized that there was a way out, if I was simply to do a difficult thing, my mood started to shift. And then part of it, as I realized, that there's some certain circumstances at work that I can't change, you know, how people are, their personalities, certain aspects of the job. And can I accept that and just let go and let it be how it's going to be? And I noticed, it wasn't instantaneous, but I noticed just pretty shortly after how my mood started to shift because I saw a possibility. You know, so that feeling of stuckness, that nothing's going to change, it's going to be miserable, is central to depression. So even the seeing the possibility of something change can shift the mood and help you, you know, pull out of that pit. You ever experienced that?
Yeah. As an entrepreneur, I mean, all the time, because like I said, I'm a one-man team a lot of the time. And, you know, a lot of times, I mean, I've had situations where, you know, I'm wondering where the heck my next batch of money's coming from. Right. Cause like I've gotten down to points where like, I'm like, how am I going to pay for groceries? How am I going to pay for, like, I've been in positions where I couldn't afford a cup of coffee, and there was no immediate, like very apparent change that I could make in order to like switch that up. Right. Yeah. It was just, you had to move forward or you had to figure something out. And I kept, you know, especially like toward, I want to say around this time last year, I was like, you know, constantly saying, you know, I got to change this. There's got to be something different here. I'm 40 years old. I don't have a retirement saved up. I don't have anything saved up. This thing is my life. And so, I made moves to make some switches. And what it took was I had to step back. Like I had to step back and look at my life and my business as an outsider. And the only way that I've been able to do that, you know, people, it sounds funny, but meditation helps me to detach, right? It helps me to kind of like understand where my thought processes are going. And because as a solopreneur, it's really easy to get wrapped up and get tunnel vision. But meditation in various forms has helped me to detach and kind of understand those thoughts. And it's helped me to take a step back and look at my life a little bit more objectively. So I made a pivot, and that's where I was like, all right, you've been contracting for companies, you know, teaching business courses for a while. Why don't you do that off on your own? And that made a complete difference in my life and my business and everything like that, and gave me a completely different path to take. So it was like, and it was something that I couldn't see before. Like I just couldn't see it at all. And and I wouldn't have been able to make that switch if I couldn't detach.
That's true. It can be so easy. And I think without being aware of it, that then it comes back to awareness, is that so many of our decisions are emotionally driven, and not that emotionally driven decisions are bad, but if they happen when we don't need them to happen, like we can't be objective about our situation, like you said, it can definitely hurt us.
Well,
you know, if we can step back and look at our life objectively and say, okay, there's a reason, like, let's say for me, and I'm looking at how other people are interacting with me, there's a reason people are interacting in a certain way. What is it? And if I'm emotionally driven, my answer might be, oh, cause they're fucked up. And maybe that's just where it stays. And that's gives me very limited data if I just look at it through that lens. But if I say, okay, maybe this is their style and there's things I do that bother them. So if I acted this way, you know, then we're thinking logically at that point.
Well, exactly. And, you know, one thing I want to mention here, because of the audience and because of our own histories, but like, I think that, you know, getting out of the military, right? Even if you were not, even if you didn't have the best military career, like let's say you get out as like a terminal lance and, you know, you didn't do much or anything like that, you're still coming out of a situation where people were paying attention to you, right? So like you had reviews of what you were doing, right? You had people evaluating you. People were paying attention to you, your life, your path. And in whatever way, those people cared about you, right? What you realize that when you get out of the military is that nobody really gives a frigging damn if you're a fuck up. Like nobody cares, right? And so, and it's not that nobody cares. It's that nobody's over your shoulder saying, hey, you know what? Fix this. Hey, you know what? Do this. And so when you get out, a lot of times you can look back at your military career and you can say, you know what? That was my chance. That was my chance to be something. And now I'm out and that chance is over. And I don't have anybody who's paying attention to me. So you could feel trapped. Like you can feel very trapped right when you get out. And I think it's important that when you do get out, you try to get yourself into another situation where you are in a position to feel like you have a mission, like you have people who are depending on you to do things. And you know, I think that's so important.
Even if it's just to plan a party or plan a group run. And that's one of the reasons I really, really love the group Team RWB, which I'm a part of up here in Sonoma County, because you get that tribe of people and you get that feedback from other people. And it's just, it doesn't have to be anything important. Like you don't have to be, you know, a firefighter putting out structure fires or doing anything really intense, but it's the social interactions themselves and the teamwork.
Let me ask you this, Mike, because I think it's important. Before we get off, the nature of your work, right? Because your job is to counsel veterans. And you were talking about the mirror neurons. Does your job impact your mindset at all? Like, have you ever had that happen? And how do you prevent that from happening if it does?
That's a really good one. At first, when I was an intern, so I'm a licensed clinical social worker and I direct a vet center, part of the VA. When I was interning and working in the city of San Francisco with the homeless outreach team, we'd go around and find homeless people that our unwritten, you know, mission statement was that we'd find people who, even if they had the money, wouldn't be able to pay for an apartment. You know, they didn't have the ability to do that. And I encountered a lot of poverty, drug abuse, just really sad situations and people just being evil to each other a lot of the times, a lot of suffering. And I didn't know how to stay separate from that energy. And I use the term energy and it can sound pretty new agey, but I've seen it just in a practical manner. Like if you talk, like you see in the terms of, if you have someone who's really negative and you're around them a lot, you can find yourself taking on that energy. It's just how we are as people with those mirror neurons. And so when I'm working with people, I consciously decide that I'm going to be there to support them, but I'm not going to get wrapped up in that energy. And it takes conscious effort to do that. I mean, but there are things that are more difficult to take on, and it can impact me. But I've had enough practice now that when I leave work, I make a decision to have that stay right there. I realize there's some things I cannot fix and resolve for people. In fact, my job is just to guide them to make their own discoveries, make their own changes. And so it's that reminder that this is something, no matter how many times I work with someone, it's up to them to make these changes. And I can be there as their support and to ask those questions and have those difficult conversations. But when I leave the building, I leave it there. And I listen to either music or a fiction story or a podcast, something to add levity to the situation, you know, something funny maybe, or something that just completely helps me switch gears so I don't bring that energy home.
Yeah, I think that kind of stuff is really important, because we do have people who listen who do have jobs where they could be carrying stuff back with them. And, you know, the next question, I guess, is, you know, thinking back with your experience in the Marine Corps, could you have applied anything that you know now to what you were doing back then?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. My mental strength, I can endure physical stuff. I mean, you learn that from day one in boot camp, but my ability to deal with, I don't know, situations I couldn't change, or I'm trying to think other different personalities. You know, in some ways I was still pretty immature. Mm-hmm. And I could have definitely applied my ability of breathing, stepping back, you know, like just like you were saying, stepping back and looking at a situation and seeing what I can control, what I couldn't, what I could make a game out of, what I couldn't, and allowing myself to feel certain feelings. It was pretty easy just to push it off and kind of white knuckle it through. And I think the alcohol use definitely played into that, at least the level I took it to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
So there's a few practical things too that can help anyone when you're in that state. And one of them, which I'm a big fan of now, ever since I started doing open water swimming in the San Francisco Bay, was just cold water. And why cold water is because cold water, there's a physiological effect that happens. You know, when you jump into cold water, it shocks you out of feeling depressed. I mean, your body all of a sudden feels very awake. But there are, and without going into the science of it too much, it's the easiest way to make a change in your body. You know, it can be daunting to say, okay, I'm going to go have a hard workout, do a CrossFit workout or something like that. Things like that really help. But if you can just take a cold shower or jump in a cold body of water, that will instantly change your outlook on life.
Something I've done every morning. I mean, I'll get in there, I'll run that shower. I'll stay under the cold water for about 3 minutes. And then, it really helps. It really does help. And I was a big skeptic about it at first. I was like, you know, fuck this hippie shit. It's stupid. But just try it. Just try it. And it feels great. It feels great.
Yeah. And then you get a rush of endorphins after, cause your body's like, well, what the hell is happening? Make this person feel better. So these are real scientific explanations for why it works, but it definitely snaps you out of it. It gets you out of that rut. Another thing is sunlight exposure. Even when it is winter time if you can get out and have some sun exposure in large parts of your body, like say your back. So if you're in an area where you can walk around without a shirt on, or get some sun on your face, on your shoulders, then that's going to help your body, you know, get that vitamin D. And some of us have a requirement for more of it than not. That's what another thing I learned with my genetic information is that I need much more vitamin D3 or vitamin D than the average person. So the sun exposure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and it's easy for us to say that the rest of the country is about to go into 25 below.
I know. And I'm outside like, God damn it. I got to put a sweatshirt on. Another thing too, that anyone can do is going on a walk. And why this can sound simple, it's pretty powerful, because if you think about depression as stuck energy, it makes us feel stuck. Anyone who's been depressed knows how hard it is to get up out of bed sometimes, or just to do basic things that usually aren't that hard to do. So maybe even going to the gym is more than you can do in certain days when it's pretty bad. But if you can tell yourself, okay, I'm just going to go on a walk, and I'm going to walk to the end of the street, and then if by then I want to turn back, I'll let myself turn back. But you give yourself a very easy goal that you can start off with. Just movement itself brings possibility. Just movement itself is a physical representation of moving forward and not being stuck. And I was so surprised to see how much that affected my outlook on things. Just the physical act of running and moving was something that Lisa Hallett, who started Wear Blue, Run to Remember, used to deal with the grief of losing her husband in Afghanistan, who was an army captain. And I realized that when I've used working out, running, physical movement, that it helps me to physically and mentally move forward.
Yeah, that's cardio exercise in general has just always helped me to feel better. Like always helped me to feel better. And, you know, I remember, cause I grew up on the East Coast, and, you know, during the winter time, nobody does cardio over there. Like very few people do. Cause I mean, it's cold. It gets cold, freezing cold. Everybody puts on 15 pounds. Everybody puts on like a layer of clothes so you can't see your body. And then everybody like stays indoors and everything like that. And I gotta say, you know, doing that out in nature, like out in the fresh air, is so much different from doing it on a treadmill. I mean, a treadmill is good to go, but like, you know, just being outside and like catching the air in your lungs and you know, getting the proprioception of like hitting like, you know, different terrain and things like that. It's such a different brain exercise.
It is, because it's this novel experience of seeing different patterns and things and the shapes of trees and plants that gives your brain, it lights up certain parts of your brain and allows other parts of your brain to calm down. And I think now more than ever, it's important to do. So I found when I'm depressed, I'm more likely to be spending too much time on social media and looking at other people's profiles and you know, this idea that, you know, people are doing so well because they post these inspirational things or these pictures of them doing well. And internally I'll start comparing and I'll be more depressed. But more than that too, you know, we get this reaction from, you know, these notifications and likes and comments and things. And
yeah, it's a dopamine hit every time exactly. It hits up, you know, and we become addicted to it. And if you're not getting that feedback, then you fall into like a little bit of a depression. And, you know, I've pulled back a lot from social media in 2019.
You
know, I haven't been posting as much on Instagram, not because I don't want to keep posting on Instagram, but because, you know, I'm constantly sitting there like thinking, all right, what can I get likes with? You know what I mean? And when I start thinking like that, I'm like, you know, I'm kind of done with it, you know? And
exactly.
want to get the message out there, but it's still, you know, not at the cost of the mental numbness that comes from doing that.
Yeah. And that's why taking a break and even just sitting outside and just being with the sounds of, you know, the wind or being around some of the natural life outdoors is so beneficial to recharge. Yeah. So yeah, man, jump in that cold water, get some sunlight exposure, maybe take a vitamin D supplement and get outside and stop checking your fucking Instagram like a fiend.
Yeah. I'll also add, clean up your diet. I mean, like,
you
know,
yeah,
so many things that, you know, if you're constantly just eating sugar, I mean, sugar in and of itself can cause a lot of things, but like if your hormonal balance is off because you're not getting what you need in your diet and you're not producing, you know, enough testosterone, you're not, if you're overproducing cortisol because you got a really inflammatory diet, I mean, there's so many things that could lead to depression if you're not taking care of yourself, not taking care of your nutrition.
Yeah. And one final practical thing, at least from me, that can sound weird, but that I have all my clients do because I've done and I've felt the power from it, is when I'm deep in a funk or when I'm really anxious or restless, what helps me is I think of someone who's very important to me or someone who's affected my life positively. And I'll either find them in person or it's usually on the phone and call them up and thank them for being so important to me. And so this is the practical aspect or the practical way of expressing gratitude. We hear gratitude a lot, but this is how it's done. Really putting yourself into it and thanking them for how they've impacted you and telling them what it is about themselves that's so cool or so good. Mm-hmm. That is something that can, because gratitude is one of the only states or feelings that we can really harness or create ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that is such a lightning fast way to get out of a funk that it can't be overlooked.
That's huge. Awesome, man. Well, so this is the second joint episode of the Warrior Soul Transitions from War podcast. We got to come up with a name of this.
I bet someone listening to this might have some cool ideas.
Yeah. If you guys have some names for this network that we're putting together here, and the way it's going to work is, 1 week we'll be here on the Warrior Soul podcast. The next week we'll be over on the Transitions from War podcast. And, we're kind of going to go back and forth and back and forth. Unless we find another way to do it. But I think that's the gist of everything. And then if anybody out there wants to design some graphics for us or anything like that, let us know as well, because we'd love to come up with kind of like a joint thing. But, you know, the reason why we're doing this is for all of you. And, you know, we're not asking for anything in return at all. All we ask is that, you know, you spread word about both of these shows, because they're both giving value to the veteran community and anybody else who's listening, honestly, because anybody can apply any of this stuff. So if you get a chance, head over to iTunes and, you know, head over to the Transitions from More podcast and head over to the Warrior Soul podcast. Just write us some written reviews, let people know that we're here, let people know what we're doing. And you know, even better than that, share an episode out with a friend who could use some of this information.
Yeah, that's about sums it up for me, man.
Awesome.
So I love getting together with you, man. So I love the work that you're doing, and this is fun stuff.
Yeah, man. You make getting up at 4 a.m. enjoyable.
Exactly. So you got some company now, Jocko.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week.
Yut.